All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 40-14 win over the Arizona Cardinals in Week 15.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalFans.com, on Twitter at FalFans, and of course, I host this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, I am giving you my initial takeaways of the Falcons' Week 15 win over the Arizona Cardinals, snapping their five-game losing streak with a very dominant 40-14 outcome in this game. I'll be honest with you at the top of this thing, I did not get to see this game in its entirety. I missed the first two drives, which included the Cardinals' first score, as well as the start of the fourth quarter due to the fact that my car was getting some repairs done and I had to sort of exit to, in order to drop it off and or pick it up from the mechanic. So for that reason, I'm not going to be entirely focused on doing the normal thing and breaking down like, oh, these guys stood out and this guy stood out and these things stood out for me. You know, I still probably only missed maybe about 20% of the game, and I could probably do that for the remaining 80%, but to be honest with you, at this point in the season, now 15 games in with the Falcons sporting a 5-9 record, pointing out those sorts of things is not that interesting to me. You know, given the record, given the prospect of tanking, given the fact that people's jobs on the line, and sort of me sitting here saying like, oh, I thought Ito Smith played well, Grady Jarrett played really well, and my boy Steven Means played really well, that's just not particularly interesting to me. So I know some of you guys are in the sort of full-on tank mode, and today's outcome was not necessarily your ideal result. But for me, and this was something I'd said many times over the last couple of weeks, and particularly last week, gearing up to this game, is I just wanted to see an entertaining performance from this Falcon. I sort of hate sitting there having my Sundays ruined by watching a bad football team for 3 hours and then having to spend an hour plus recording a podcast, editing a podcast, and uploading a podcast for you guys out there. I enjoy doing that for you guys, but when it's talking about a bad football team, I don't enjoy doing that. So, we're not going to necessarily talk about that. What we will talk about, however, is that the Falcons were very explosive today. They had five plays of 20 plus yards, which is how I categorize explosive plays. Now, to me, you know, the fact that the Falcons had this big offensive outcome and the fact that they had all these big plays today, to me, is not two unrelated issues. One of the things after this game, I went back and looked and looked up, you know, weeks 1 through 9 when the Falcons were 4-4, they had 39 explosive plays or plays of 20 plus yards, which was tied for 7th most in the NFL up to that point, up through the Redskins game, which if you do on a per game basis was tied for 5th in the league, based off of their 8 games up to that point. And, you know, for the sake of comparison, if you look at the 2016 team through that same point in the season, they had about 48 big plays through 9 weeks. And I think it was like maybe like 40-8, if I'm not mistaken. And they had like a whole bunch against the I think that 9th game was the Tampa Bay game, where they had a whole bunch of them. So they were about on track for at least in terms of being as explosive as that 2016 team. But when you look at the data since week 10, since they lost to that Cleveland game in the 5 games since then, not including today's performances, but they have been 25th in the league. Or 24th if you only count per game basis in terms of generating those explosive plays. And it sort of confirms what I've been saying for a number of years, which is that offenses tend to live and die by their ability to be explosive. And it's interesting that when you look at the number of drives that include, you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum, the non-explosive drives, which typically are those long plodding drives. So if you look at the number of drives that include 10 or more plays, the Falcons in 2018 have the 6th most of those drives this year with 25 of those. But in terms of the percentage of those that wind up being resulting in scores, they're actually 31st in the league. They're the 2nd worst offense in the league. They've only scored on 68% of those drives when the league average is 80%. The Vikings are 32nd and the Cardinals are 29th or 30th in the league. So we just faced a team that was also pretty bad at those. And so you would think, given how good the Falcons have been on third downs, they should be a lot better in that regard. And that's proof, like their ability to convert third downs at a high rate is why they have so many of them, but they can't finish those drives. And, you know, to be fair to the team, a lot of those have been quote unquote bad luck. A lot of those misses, they've had a bunch of turnovers, particularly as of late. And, you know, many of their more notorious red zone struggles throughout this year, including the Philadelphia game, as well as that fourth down failure against Cleveland, have come on those drives that included these long plotting drives with 10 plus plays. You know, their turnover rate on these specific drives is the highest in the league, with 16% of those 10 plus play drives resulting in turnovers. And for those of you guys that are relatively new to the podcast, I've been talking about explosiveness and the teams need to be explosive since like 2013. So this is definitely a hill that I'm more than willing to die on. And again, for you relative newcomers that are still somewhat baffled by my Sanu hatred, this is a big reason why I'm not a big fan of his, nor will I ever be a big fan of his. I think teams basically investing significant resources in possession wide receivers is silly. And, you know, part of the reason why I don't put DeAndre Hopkins in my top five NFL wide receiver rankings is because I don't think of him. I think of him as a possession receiver. But, you know, the thing that Hopkins does do is he does make a lot of plays down the field. And over the last 2 years with Watson being the quarterback there, he has been one of the more effective, if not most effective, vertical threats in the league because of his ability to win at the catch point. So he doesn't necessarily have to have that deep vertical speed that, you know, challenges and forces teams to have to bring safety help over to that side of the field because he's able to win in traffic and win at the catch point. But, you know, I'm not making this about Sanu. I'm just informing you guys that's a big part of why, I continue to spew hatred towards him. But, you know, I think we'll have to sort of see. You know, I'm not against teams using second and third round picks on possession receivers because basically you're paying, what, like $600,000 a year for those guys in terms of what you're paying them in salary outside of that draft pick, you know, if over the course of 4 years, and you compare that to what the Falcons may wind up paying Mohamed Sanu if he's retained on the team for a fourth year in 2019, he'll have earned over $26 million in that. And so to me, like paying 400% as much money as you need to, in my opinion, just is not a good use of resources. But that's a conversation for another day. I'm sure I'll get into that. So in the future, if you become a regular listener or already a regular listener of this podcast. But the bigger point is, like, I'm a big believer in explosiveness, and every scrap of data I've seen, particularly involving the Falcons over the past 8 years that I've looked at, strongly suggest that there is a very high correlation between explosiveness and scoring points in this league. I haven't yet done a league-wide study. That was one of the things I was hoping to do last offseason, but just didn't have the time to do it. And I hope to make up for it this spring. But most of the data I've seen, at least in terms of looking at teams that typically finish in the top five or top 10 or bottom five or bottom 10 in terms of big plays, those 20-plus yard plays generated, also match up very well with the same teams that finish in the top five or top 10 or vice versa in the bottom five or bottom 10 in terms of points scored. So that is a compelling enough data for me to at least believe that there's a pretty good correlation there. You know, I also recall a point where there was like an 8 year run between like 2009 and like 2016 or something like that, where pretty much every team that made the Super Bowl also was a team that finished in the top 10 when you looked at the number of 20-plus yard pass plays that they had per pass attempt in terms of the percentage of basically their big pass play rate that you could look at. I don't know if that streak is still going because I haven't really checked it the last couple of years, but we know the Falcons definitely finished in the top 10. I think the Eagles did last year, but maybe one of these Patriots Super Bowl teams didn't quite finish in the top 10, and maybe they finished like 12th or something like that. But that's, you know, I think that's an important thing to point out in that correlation. I think another thing that correlates pretty well and corresponds somewhat with scoring is also getting those big plays on defense. And those big plays on defense, I happen to categorize typically being sacks and turnovers. And I think the Falcons definitely did that today. And we're going to talk about that in a moment coming up. But first, I do want to let you guys know about the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, where you can find a new Locked On podcast expert every Monday talking with Matt about what their teams did. Then Tuesday, you can follow up with former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfeld on the show with Matt. Wednesdays is Pro Football Focus's Mike Renner. Thursdays is ESPN's Mike Sandow. And then Friday, you can get Matt's picks of the week for each weekend's upcoming games. Find the Locked On NFL podcast wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. Now, speaking of picking games, the hard part about picking games in this league is it's really hard to predict, you know, any given Sunday and all that stuff. And so, you know, for example, I picked the Falcons to win this past week against Arizona, but I thought it would be a low-scoring affair. It did not prove to be true. But if you knew that the Falcons were going to blow out this Arizona Cardinals team, then maybe you guys should be checking out my bookie, because you got to remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to go to my bookie. Trust me, they're the best bet that you will make this entire year. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is very easy to use, so you can get in and get out and make those bets each and every Sunday morning or whenever you decide to log on to mybookie.ag. They have in-game live betting, over-under on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. Recently, guys, MyBookie has been slammed with new bettors and wants to help you guys out by giving you a $25 free play if and when you deposit $100 or more after 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Go ahead, use the promo code LOCKEDON25 in order to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON25 to get an extra $25 after you deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern. You play, you win, you get paid. Now, one of the things, if you've been a regular listener of this podcast throughout this season, I've been talking about is, you know, pretty much every crossover Wednesday, we come on and I say the one thing that you can almost guarantee I'm going to say each and every week, and I'm going to say it next week too, and I'm going to say it the week after that too. It's guaranteed. Lock it in. Is that the Falcons have to get off to a fast start. You know, they don't have a tendency to finish games. That's been a big issue for them. That goes back. That's not a Dan Quinn issue. That's a pretty much been a pretty consistent issue for a decade plus. But they did get off to a fast start today against Arizona. And that was instead being not in, normally being spearheaded by the offense, it was actually spearheaded by the defense, which I think helped jumpstart this offense because of their tendency over the last couple of weeks in particular to get off to these slow starts. And they were sort of not necessarily all the pressure wasn't put on them to have to come out here and drop 14 points on their first two drives. And as the game wore on, they were able to take advantage of some of the things. You look at their 26 first half points, 20 of those were generated off of turnovers, off of three turnovers the Falcons had. So they were able to generate almost 7 points off of those turnovers. Most of the data I've seen over the years on average in the NFL, it's about 3.3, 3.4, 3.5 points per turnover. So basically, you know, for every two turnovers that you, every two takeaways that a team generates, you generally on average score a touchdown. And so you saw that today. The first one got things started was the patented Deion Jones pick six. We have sorely missed those. I'm pretty confident that he even played in those 10 other games this year. We might have gotten at least one of those prior to that. But, you know, Vic Beasley had a nice deflection. Deion Jones picked it off and scored on it. That was the Falcons' first points of the game. Then later at the top of the second quarter, you had a sack strip by Grady Jarrett. Or I think at the end of the first quarter, you had a sack strip by Grady Jarrett, which was recovered by Brian Poole, which the Falcons then turned into points at the start of the second quarter with a touchdown. Then later, Poole picked off a pass after the two-minute warning, and the Falcons turned that into another touchdown with a very excellent grab and throw from Matt Ryan to Julio Jones. He made a diving catch. He wound up nicking up his ribs a little bit on that play and sort of, you know, he exited the game. He came back in at a certain point, but I think at that point he was just kind of being a decoy, because I don't recall him catching anything after that point, but I'm sure he had like maybe one or two catches, one or two targets. Yeah, I think he had a couple of comeback catches either in the third or fourth quarter. But, you know, hopefully that rib injury is nothing serious, and it doesn't seem like it is. But going back to what I was saying is I think, you know, when we look at a football team, the two things you want it to be is you want it to be explosive on offense. You want it to be opportunistic on defense. And a team that can be that consistently each and every week is going to be a team that's very hard to beat. And that's sort of the team that we're talking about when we're talking about a Super Bowl contending team. And, you know, when I talked about on last Tuesday's episode, this team's lack of identity, part of the reason why I think this team has to figure out that is because I think once they're able to identify what their identity is, and in that specific case, what I was referring to is whether they're going to be a primarily a three wide receiver offense or be more of a two tight end offense or feature a fullback. And I presented it mainly as you can either feature tight ends and fullbacks or three wide receivers, although you can be a two tight end offense. And then also there's a third option, which is like the Eagles are basically, they don't have a fullback, but they feature a lot of tight ends. But anyway, once you're able to figure out what your identity is, I think you can do a much better job designing explosive plays. And in our specific case, the Falcons primarily play action passing off of that identity to take advantage of those opportunities. And I think when it comes to being opportunistic on defense, I believe that you have to be able to create reliable pressure, which is what the Falcons were able to do today. And the data I've seen doesn't suggest it's a super strong correlation, but I've seen a slight correlation in the past linking a team's ability to generate sacks and or pressure with also generating a higher number of interceptions. Again, it's not a huge correlation, but at the very least, if it's a small correlation, it does feel at least intuitive, even if it's not a compelling link between the stats and whatnot. And, you know, typically we look at fumbles. Fumbles are essentially random. The only fumbles that don't seem as random are the ones that involve sack strips, like we saw today with Grady Jarrett. You would generally assume that a team is able to hit a quarterback more often, sack a quarterback more often. It's also going to also generate a higher number of sort of sacks that result in fumbles and whatnot compared to a team that rarely hits the quarterback. And so if you're creating pressure up front, you know, that also means that the quarterback's also going to be under fire a lot. It's going to lead to him making some poor decisions. If he's getting hit a bunch, it's going to lead to him not being able to follow through on his throws and making some errant throws due to pressure and whatnot. And also because the ball's going to be forced to come out quicker or the quarterback's going to be sacked, it's also going to allow your defensive backs to maybe potentially squat on some underneath throws and jump those throws and not have to be as fearful of wide receiver's ability to take the top off the defense, and that's going to lead to some more interceptions. You know, interceptions or turnovers in general still tend to be very luck-based. You can argue that Debo's pick six today and Casey's, most if not all of Casey's interceptions have been off of deflections and arguably being in the right place at the right time. But, you know, so there still is a significant element of luck to it. So you can't just necessarily manufacture an opportunistic defense in the same way that you can for an explosive offense. But, you know, again, at least intuitively, it does make sense that the more you improve your pass rush, the better you should be at least in an opportunity to exploit some opportunities that you have, at least on defense. And so you saw that again today, 7 sacks for the Falcons this year, 9 hits or this today, 9 hits on the Cardinals quarterback, including those sacks, which again is exactly what you want to see with this going up against this Cardinals offensive line that has been decimated by injuries. They lost 4 starters to injuries already. They're on IR at this point. You know, they've basically had to pick up, you know, Joe Barksdale, their starting right tackle, they signed like a week or so ago. I think last week was his first game, his first start with the team. Their right guard, Ode Abushi, they picked up, I think, right before Halloween. They have 2, if not 3, rookies starting for them. Their left side, Corey Cunningham and Kobe Bassett, a rookie. I think Mason Cole's a second-year player. But Mason Cole's basically the only, you know, week one starter that's still on the team, the center. So basically, you know, the equivalent would basically be if the Falcons starting 5 was like Ty Sambrello, Sean Harlow, Wes Schweitzer, Zay Beatles, and Matt Gano. And so, you know, when some people complain about the injuries being sort of this huge thing that tanked the Falcons season, I'm in the back of my head, I'm like, it could still be a lot worse than what it is. I don't know if the Falcons have as much room to complain at this point in the year as other teams do. Certainly we were hard hit early in the season, and maybe the injuries were part of the reason why the team got off to the 1-4 start. But I don't think you can blame injuries for why the team has gone, you know, now what, 4-5 since then. So that's what I wanted to say about the defense. We'll talk about sort of what this game and this win means for the rest of the season and perhaps in 2019 in just a moment. But speaking of 2019, you guys definitely want to check out two draft podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. The Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, hosted by John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. The Draft Dudes Podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. Find them both wherever you get Locked On Podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, where you can find those four guys' written content in addition to several other people's video content and what more. Again, that's going to be your one-stop resource for the 2019 draft, as well as the offseason coming up. Your team every day. So I know many of you guys were all about the tank and the team firing half their assistant coaches, and maybe some of you are about the team firing the head coach, but that catastrophe was averted today. And yes, I know you can't get too hyped about today's win because it's the Cardinals and they're arguably in contention for being the worst team in football right now. But let's be honest, the Falcons were also in that conversation, at least based off of how they played the last five games. And so being able to dominate this Cardinals team at least shows that this team has a little bit of fight left in them, and at least they're no longer in the conversation for being one of the two to three worst teams in football right now. And, you know, we don't have to raise as many questions about this team's talent level heading into next season, which has been a topic of discussion that I've certainly talked about in this podcast. Is like, you know, people asking me, like, is this team as talented as we've hyped them up to be? And that was a legit question based off of how they performed. And, you know, one of the things I talked about prior to this game, coming off of the heels of that Packers loss, was sort of whether Dan Quinn was starting to look like that hot seat was starting to warm up, and whether he might be in risk of losing his job. And I think, you know, that was largely based off of somewhat of my expectation that the Falcons might lose this game to the Cardinals, which would have probably likely signaled that this team was poised for a 4-12 finish. And now, granted, I didn't see the first 8 minutes of this game or so, but based off of what I was reading on Twitter, until that Deion Jones pick six, at least I was a little bit worried about whether this team had showed up today and whether we were going to see this team finish. And so, basically, again, I didn't watch the first drive of the Cardinals or the Falcons today, but based off of what I'm picturing in my head, based off of people's Twitter reactions, and based off of the second offensive possession that the Falcons had, where I think they went 3-and-out, if we had continued to see that for another 3.5 quarters, I don't think it's crazy for me to have basically speculated that Arthur Blank might have been like, you know what, this is not the team I want, and let's see if we can start firing people. But it's one win. It doesn't mean that they're automatically going to turn their season around and finish 7-9. They still got two tough divisional road games against Carolina and Tampa Bay over the next 2 weeks. So I know if you're all about that tank, you can still keep your dreams alive that this team is still going to struggle over the next 2 weeks. I think they're still technically in the hunt for a top three draft selection as of this recording. I think they're currently slated to pick 6 in the draft right now, based off of where this recording and based off of the early results of today's game. Still a couple of games left to be played. You know, for me, one of the things I was thinking about over this past week was, I think the Falcons offense needed to score at least like 80 points over these final 3 weeks in order to have any chance of saving Steve Sarkisian's job. They got about half that today, 40. So maybe I'll move the goalpost a little bit and say instead of 80, now they need 90. So that means that they need to score at least 40, if not 50 points over these last two games in order for Sark to potentially salvage his job. You know, that's basically, if they can get about 24 points in on average in each of these next two games, I think that gives Sark a chance. And that led me to at least look at, you know, some of the stats, because, like, you know, technically it's possible for them to win a 20-17 game against Carolina or Tampa Bay, but I actually looked it up and saw some interesting stats that I think we all sort of intuitively knew, but it didn't necessarily register in my brain until I actually looked it up. But, you know, since Dan Quinn started coaching the team in 2015, in games where the Falcons do not score at least 23 points, so if they score 22 or less, they are 4-24. Now, if they actually hit that 23-point benchmark, they are 33-6 under Dan Quinn. It is like a night and day difference. Like that, like we talked about this throughout the 2016 season, which was if this team didn't hit 31 points or more, they lost like every single game, exception of one, I think, that year. I think they were like 1-7 or whatever they were. But like overall, over the course of this 4 years, almost four full seasons, that number is like 23 points. And, you know, it's in large part due to their defense's inability to be good. Like, you know, like they're just not going to win games 24-21 most weeks, just because their defense is rarely going to shut down teams unless they're spearheaded by a strong offensive performance that can force teams to sort of play one-dimensional. And there are exceptions to that, don't get me wrong, but that's been the general trend. And what's been problematic with Sark, at least, is that, you know, in terms of the games where they failed to hit that magic number 23, you know, that Michael Jordan number, 53% of the games that Sark has coordinated so far, of the 32, I believe, games he's coordinated so far, including the playoffs, they have failed to hit that number. When you compare that to Shanahan, that was only 31% of his games, with almost all but one of those, I think the Eagles game in 2016, came in 2015. And so I feel like you're not going to drop 30 burgers every single week. You know, that's part of the reason why that 2016 season was, you know, an outlier and sort of regression was inevitable. But I think even a healthy offense is still only going to maybe struggle to score 23 or more points in maybe 20-25% of their games. You look at the Colts and Chargers, two teams that are among the top 10 scoring offenses this year. They only have three of such games where they failed to hit 23 points this year compared to the Falcons 7. So, you know, sitting here today, you know, speculating on which coach is going to come back next year, I have no idea. You know, I think we saw guys coaching for their jobs. I feel like, in the very least, Manuel responded very well with being a lot more aggressive with the blitzing today. We'll see if he continues to do that against Carolina and Tampa Bay over these final 2 weeks. He won't have the advantage of facing an overmatched rookie quarterback, a first-time play caller, really no complimentary receiver options outside of Larry Fitzgerald and one of the league's worst offensive lines. Carolina and Tampa Bay, neither of those teams are juggernauts, but they don't really have those. They might check maybe one of those boxes, but certainly not all five of those boxes or however many I just named. So we'll see what sort of happens the rest of the season. As far as losing in order to get the highest draft pick, I've never been one of those people that's invested with getting the highest draft pick possible, whether it's the third pick, the sixth pick, the 12th pick. It doesn't really matter to me all that much. Certainly, I'm not invested into it today. I certainly understand the arguments that the higher the pick, the better the chances that they land a superstar. That's generally true. And specifically in this year's draft, considering one of the big three pass rushers that most people are enamored with, including myself, that include Nick Bosa, Ed Oliver, Quinnen Williams. But to be honest with you, by the time April rolls around, we might be adding a fourth or fifth name to that list. Maybe that's Josh Allen. Maybe that's Brian Burns that, you know, people are quote unquote willing to settle for. Or maybe there's another need that emerges between over the next 4 months that people are more than willing to allow the team to draft for and use a potential top 10 pick or whatever on a non-pass rusher. You know, at this point, who knows? And so that's not the reason I say this, because it's not something that I'm going to be too concerned with in December. Those are, to me, are April conversations, which is a regular theme that I always say on this podcast. You know, if it happens to be that, you know, this draft boils down to the big three or bust, I also believe that the Falcons can trade up if they want to. I'm usually an anti-trade up type of person, but I think given that you can make a very compelling case that the Falcons should be all in for 2019, given how this season has gone, the fact that they also won't be giving up as much value as you probably normally would think, because they're not trading up for a quarterback, they're not trading up for Julio Jones. And I think they also have an opportunity to mitigate some of what they might lose in a trade-up in terms of the value of the draft picks by being a little bit more aggressive and active in free agency. And again, their record indicates that seems likelier to happen than not. And you know, one of the arguments you can make why the Julio Jones trade didn't necessarily work out as great as it probably could have is because coming off of the lockout, the Falcons weren't as aggressive in that free agency with basically adding Ray Edwards and somebody else that I've completely blanked on, and then basically doing nothing in 2012, which was Lofa Tupu and Vince Manuai, neither of whom played a snap, and they traded for Asante Samuel as well. But they basically, you know, twiddled their thumbs the following offseason, so they weren't able to sort of counter the value they lost in the draft with free agent additions. And I know some of you are like, wait, you think the Julio Jones trade was a bad trade? That's not what I said. I don't think the Julio Jones trade was all good or bad. I don't think it's as black and white as people make it out. In a nutshell, I think there were obvious benefits for the Julio Jones trade, which I think without that trade, there's no chance that the Falcons are in the NFC Championship game in 2012. But I also think there were some costs to that trade, that what the Falcons gave up directly affected their ability to field a talented roster in 2013 and 2014 once they had injuries and age start to sort of deteriorate some of the top-level players on their roster in those years. But, you know, all of that's a conversation that I'm sure we'll be talking more about in the next couple of months. So basically, I'll leave you guys with my three general takeaways are explosiveness is good. The pass rush was good. That's good. And we'll see if these coaches can sort of save their jobs. I think they did at least enough to get some of the pressure off of them on today's game. We'll see if they can continue this over these next 2 weeks, and we'll see how that affects their tanking strategy. You know, I already see disgruntled Falcon fans, even when the team is winning, we can't be happy. But that's just the way it is when you have this type of season. So we'll keep on talking about that this week as well as in the coming weeks. If you want to provide your feedback to me, you can do so. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, but the show's Twitter handle is the easiest place to hit me up, and that's Locked On Falcons. The Facebook page is Locked On Falcons. The email address is LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And, of course, you can leave a comment at FalcFans.com where the podcast is posted daily. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.